Oh, yes. Sunday night, live. You're listening to Sports Wrap FM 89.3 in Chapel Thrill, North Carolina. My man Robin did a very, very good, very enticing interview there on the Backyard Barbecue. And special thanks to the Backyard Barbecue for that great intro. As always, the best, best inside look at indie music in Chapel Hill. Always check in at the Backyard Barbecue. Well, let's see. A lot of good things on the agenda this week. Man, we got special treats for you. Got Mr. Greg Faun from the Daily Tar Heel fame. And Mr. JB, Mr. Bradley himself. The young little cannonball out of Fayetteville, North Carolina. We got his little thoughts on the scenes. He's taking notes diligently. Very impressive. Well, anyway, we're going to convey a lot of thoughts to you this week. A lot of good stuff. Carolina, you ought to be proud of them boys. Boy, it was an interstate rivalry. We did very, very good, even though despite a loss, 21-15, we're going to be talking a lot about that. We're going to be talking a lot about college football. Midnight Madness, that kicked off. Man, put your hoop squad on. Get your shorts ready. Get those, you know, lick those palms. Spit on the sneakers because it's ready. UNC basketball is here. Practice started yesterday at noon, so we got a little feedback from that. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit of baseball, and we'd love to hear your calls come through as well. But first off, let's talk a little football. And for those of you listening, you can stream us online at wxyc.org. Or if you are looking for a better stream, you can listen to us via iTunes under the Eclectic section. Yes, the Eclectic section. That's how we do it, WXYC. You can stream us online via iTunes or hit us online via IM. At WXYC Request. That's one word. All right. 21-15, the Steve Spurrier-led Gamecocks. We haven't seen the likes of Steve Spurrier since the 41-0 drubbing in 1990. Yes, that was an infamous moment in my college career. I'll tell you what, we took a heavy, heavy drubbing, then he took a team photo right outside the scoreboard of a 41-0 victory. I've always wanted to get Steve Spurrier back for that moment. I can't stand old Bubba, the old ball coach. And you know what? Fellas, I thought we were going to take a hit. When we were talking here last week, we took our predictions. And, you know, JB, I'll tell you, you were way off. You picked the 30-13. I was way off. I had the 31-17 because, you know what? The Heels showed up in the second half, and they did damn pretty good, man. I am really impressed and walked away very strongly with a very good, I guess you could say, mental victory. So let's talk off the first subject. Mental victory. Or was it a tough loss for the USC? And will we fold, or are we going to stand up?
This has got to be a mental victory for the Tar Heels, just because in Butch's first year, it's pretty much all moral victories at this point. The one loss record itself doesn't really matter that much. It's more about building up confidence for this first year, moving into future years when they'll be heading to bowl games.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, JB? Come on, are we going with the moral victory?
I think it shows us we can compete with the SEC, and I predicted that we weren't even going to be able to compete, and I'm really proud. And we threw some trick plays that we were trying to throw a Spurs game at him, and it didn't really work too well. But I think it was a good showing.
Okay. Hey, JB, you step into the mic. You're good. We're right on. We're right on. All right. Well, Greg, here's the first thing we're going to talk about, our boy TJ Yates. Mm-hmm. Did we say he had a very good game? How do we kind of rate him? A lot of people were buzzing in the stands in the first half, saying that, hey, maybe he was not afraid to take a knock and maybe pulling him. There was a lot of buzz around that. We stuck with him. What's the valuation on TJ Yates?
Now, overall, really good game for TJ. It's only two things kind of brought him down. The first was that interception he threw in the first half in the red zone where he was going down. He knew he was going to get sacked. He just tossed it up in the air, lobbed it up for grabs. And, of course, you saw it coming as soon as it released his hand, went straight to the South Carolina defender. That pretty ill-advised pass there. You got to take the sack even if it's going to be a 10-yard loss. So that was kind of his big mistake. The other one is he still will not run. He still will not get tackled. He will not run for that extra yard, even if it means a first down. He's still hesitant once he scrambles to actually take a hit. So he's not picking up those extra yards that he needs to on the runs. Those are the two things that got him down. The rest of the game, though, pretty impressive by TJ Yates, especially in the fourth quarter, leading those drives, passing the ball when they needed to pass the ball, using the clock well. Not a bad game overall for TJ Yates.
Okay, but I'm going to say, in terms of a lot of people are saying that he's not taking the extra yards, or he may be sliding, or avoiding tackles. Mm-hmm. A, this is a quarterback.
But not a Peyton Manning quarterback that that your team can't afford to lose.
He can't afford to lose that position right now. I don't think that may be going through his mind as well. And also, I think the staff is probably, I'm sure John Shoup works with them throughout the week. Play safe. This guy is not a mad bomber like a Matt Ryan. He's not a Brett Favre thrower.
Yeah.
You need to have very accurate throwing and accurate passing. I think that it's really pounded into him. I think the one thing, if you look at past quarterbacks in Butch Davis's systems, a la Ken Dorsey, or even in the NFL, you could even say when Jeff Garcia was up there, very safe patterns of passing. He doesn't commit a lot of turnovers, and that's what Butch Davis doesn't like. A lot of his runners protect the ball. And I think I have to say, even last week when he skirted out of the 2-yard line when he could have dove in at the touchdown, I had a few friends want to kind of gripe on me for sticking up for Yates, but he's playing safe. He dives in, makes a crazy play. There's a fumble that reverses the momentum of the game. That's just my stance. I'm willing to open up to hear anybody else's.
Well, I think there's a difference between playing safe and kind of looking cowardly when somebody's coming after you to tackle. I mean, I think there's several
cowardly,
instances.
Cowardly, though. You got a guy at 250 coming at you. I mean, you got a guy like, I mean, I'm just saying for the last
He's
year.
He's also a football
player.
You
know, come on.
But
yeah,
that's the game of football. You get tackled by 250-yard guys
taking
in football.
A direct pounding and taking a direct shot.
Sure. Every other player on the field does it all game.
Not my QB. Not the QB.
Hey,
Mr. Yates.
That's true.
Not the QB.
Tim Tebow would have scored that touchdown.
Tim Tebow is a different type of player.
True.
He takes a lot of gambles, and he has a lot more experience.
This is true. It could have been a touchdown.
Tim Tebow is 24 years old, if I'm correct. I mean, the guy has got a lot more mature. He's a lot more heady with the ball, and he has been able to improv a lot in the offense.
Yeah. I think the issue is just more just T.J. Yates, when he's scrambling out of the pocket, getting those couple extra yards at the end of the run instead of stopping short and kind of ducking for cover in the ground.
Okay, so we got our Lodge boys, T.J., if you're listening out there, or anybody out there in the Georgia family for Mr. Yates. They're asking for extra yardage. They're asking for an extra slide. Me, personally, I want to stick with my opinion. I'm going to say, listen, man, you're doing pretty damn well. You're saving the ball up. You're protecting the ball. You're a young buck. You're making heady decisions. And other than that INT, he has not really made a lot of bad decisions.
He threw two really good passes that were dropped for touchdowns.
And he's very accurate, and they're right on the money, and he's making wise choices. And that's all I can ask for. Hey, that drive where he snuck in for his touchdown, I was very impressed. And boy, and that's the next question I want to ask, you know, next topic for that. Second half performance really was probably the best performance that we've seen all year. And we really did well on both sides of the ball. What happened in the first half, and why do you think we did so well in the second half, guys? That's something we'll call out to the callers. But callers, actually, we'll bring that in, 919-962-8989. Love to hear from you. Drop a line. Love to talk a little football, because really, that was the thing to do in Chapel Hill. That tickets were hot, steaming hot. They were going for $100 to $125 outside the stadium. Yes, fat man, yes, I'm calling you out. But anyway, $100 to $125 for tickets yesterday. It was a really hot ticket, and it was good to see this Keenan Stadium filled. Call in at 919-962-8989. Love to hear from you. Guys, what do you think about the second half, and what are your takeaways for that?
I mean, the turnaround in the second half is all about UNC's defense. Butch Davis himself said they had, without question, their finest performance of the season. I think we would all agree with that. I mean, the difference in the first half is South Carolina's airing the ball out all over the place, three easy passing touchdowns. In the second half, the UNC defense came to play a whole lot. And you could argue that it's a lot had to do with South Carolina's play calling in the second half. Steve Spurrier called 16 runs and 7 passes in the second half. Now, usually you do that when you're up 21-3. You know, you sit on the ball, you try to run out the clock, but after the game, he was kicking himself for it. He said, you know, I got to call that conservative run crap, is what he said. And so you kind of, you know, you could go either way on whether it's the UNC defense really stepping it up or whether the South Carolina just kind of going into a tank, going into a shell. But I think I fall on the side of you got to give credit to UNC's defense, especially when they needed it the most in the fourth quarter. They got 3 and outs, they got punts. They were the MVP of that second half.
Okay, JP.
I think, you know, we had Mark Pascal making a big interception.
That was huge.
How often you see that?
The slow man, the son of.
We haven't seen that.
The son of former linebacker Doug Pascal. I mean, a phenomenal play.
And we've got Darrell Mapp making tackles everywhere. He's been one of the most impressive defensive players in the ACC, I think, personally. He leads the team in tackles, and I think we have something to look forward to.
Hey, we've shored up on the linebacking core. I mean, obviously, that was at the ECU point when we lost Chase Rice, everybody was thinking, wow, the ship has sunk. And, boy, we really had really falling down in terms of speed. Quan Sturdivant, Darrell Mapp, they really have stepped up. And we've got some speed in our linebacking core. Who would have thought? Even Hailey Taylor is really – Hailey Taylor, there's a name. Talk about a sleeper. Mm-hmm. Really, great plays at the end of the half. Boy, I mean, I have to give a gold star to him. He really is showing up. Man, I was blown away. And here, even Spurrier said, hey, they really outplayed us. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing with Spurrier. Where was that air attack? I know he was playing conservative.
Where was
that
the
air
fun
attack?
And gun?
Right, the fun and gun. And you know what, though? We did see that in the first half. Now, how many people out there, and listeners included, 919-962-8989, thought that fun and gun was really going to roll us over because they really did jump up pretty quick on us.
Mm-hmm. And they, if they keep that up in the second half, maybe it doesn't end up a 21-15 game. Maybe it's something more like, you know, 35-10, something like that. So yeah, you could see how that, you know, so that's what Spurrier's known for. That could have been what he's gone with, but he was going by traditional football mentality there, where you get a lead like that. I mean, 18 points. People sit on a lead with 18 points. They run the ball to eat up the clock, even in the third quarter. That's just kind of traditional football knowledge.
Okay. Well, now, here, I'm going to ask one play calling in terms of play calling on our end. Offensively, a lot of people were a little dismayed at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Not to call that, hey, on Butch Davis, but a little bit maybe on John Shoup's, our offensive coordinator's decisions, meaning that we were rolling with the ball, the big play, the game breaker that a lot of people could say that we could have scored on because we were moving the ball was the Joe Daly play, the sneak.
Mm-hmm.
Mistake or not? How do they address that in the locker room or in the press conference?
No.
Greg, you were there at the press conference.
That was not a mistake in terms of play call. I thought that play call is fine. That was a mistake in terms of Joe Daly's decision. I mean, if he tucks and runs that ball, he probably gets 6 yards on the ground, maybe more. He had the guys beat, and he threw into double coverage. I mean, I don't think the call itself is to be blamed there. You know, I think mostly it's Joe Daly's, you know, trying to force the ball in there, getting picked off like he did last year. At the same time, if you call a trick play like that, sometimes you call the trick play, and the guys running the trick play think they have to do the trick. You know, I mean, that's the whole purpose of the trick play is for Joe Daly to throw a deep pass right there, so he almost felt like he had to, probably. That was a game changer, maybe unnecessary at that point, but I mean, look, it worked last week, right? When Butch Davis called that reverse against Miami, I'm sure he felt it was the same type of thing. He said afterwards, I only call trick plays in certain situations when I think I can catch the other team off guard. He thought he'd catch the other team off guard there. Didn't work as well as he hoped, and he ended up a lot worse than he planned.
And you say on those trick plays, he has called them often. He has. And I enjoy him as a fan. I am not questioning those calls. However, I will call a little bit of questioning that, geez, we were rolling. I do believe it was a mistake at that mm-hmm. point in terms of strategy-wise. Here's the ball is rolling. We had several long games with Johnny White, several great catches. The ball was moving. Hakeem Nicks was not involved really in the offense. But why throw it then? I really think that your second point where mm-hmm. he didn't choose to keep it and he really wanted to force it because that was the play and mm-hmm. he was doing what he was told. That's what it seemed for me. But, you know, key mistakes, those, you know, these are young mistakes that it seems like we were making, granted, we're our seniors. Mm-hmm. I mean, a missed extra point from a botched extra point, I guess you could say, from two seniors, Connor Barth and the field goal holder.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have, obviously, Joe Daly. You know, those things happen, but, you know, obviously our seniors, those are the ones that we were banking on.
Mm-hmm.
But really, these are games that we should be winning, and really we're losing maybe because of youth.
Yeah. It's hard to say UNC should have won this game. You know, it's always fun to go, you know, funny to go back at the games and say, they, you know, this team should have won this game, this team should have won that game. I mean, at the same time, if you're a South Carolina fan right now, you're saying we should have won this game if Spurrier doesn't go in the tank and run the ball so many times in the second half. You know, if you're thinking, why doesn't Spurrier come out and do a second half like a first half and could, you know, win the game by even more? So it's hard to say whether UNC should have or shouldn't have won this game, but I mean, mistake by a senior guy like that. And Joe Daly is a team leader. I mean, he really is. Despite his lack of playing time, he's a vocal guy. He's a team leader. Mistake by a leader like that is about as costly as it gets.
Hey, Joe Daly, it was not like we didn't see it before from last year. It seemed like the visions of last year made you want to hold your head. However, there's two good positives in terms of the wide receiving core.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Little.
Mm-hmm.
Go-to guy
stepped up,
and boy, what a play, what a touchdown to make that at 21-9. That was unbelievable. I haven't seen that since Corey Holiday here. Really, it was really an unbelievable wide receiving play. Phenomenal. So it was really good to see Greg Little. But guys, would he be your go-to guy at the end of the game? Now, I know Brandon Tate was out.
And where's Hakeem Nicks? He had a sore ankle. He rolled his ankle, I think, in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But Greg Little had Reggie Bush-like play with that dive.
Good point. Good call. Was. I'll give you the rim shot on that one.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, now, South Carolina, we're going down there in 2010. Should we continue this rivalry in 2012?
Yeah, I say no doubt about it. I mean, you'd only have to take a look at the crowd in the stands during the game, the price of tickets outside the stadium, the excitement surrounding the whole weekend to show that this was great for football, for SEC football, for ACC football, for both schools. No doubt continue the rivalry. Maybe in 2010, 2012 or whatever, this game goes a long way to determine who's ranked where in the top 25. Okay. You know, so I think you got to continue this rivalry. Think about how exciting Chapel Hill was this weekend. You got to continue it.
All right. Well, we got a caller on the air. Caller, you're on the air tonight. FM 89.3 WXYC, you're on the air. What's going on? Caller, you may want to turn down the volume on your computer or the radio.
Hello?
Hey. All right, caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Caller. Come on now.
Hello?
Hey, I think it's the boss, man. All right. Caller, you came through. Now we got the phones working. The phones are working. Callers, if you're about to call in, turn down your volume on the radio or on your computer. Turn that on down. Call us in. We got you right here on the PBR Street Gang. We got you over the board. We're swimming upstream. All right. 2012, I think this is a great rivalry.
I think this is really good.
I think this is good, a strong association for the school. And I'll tell you what, I still pine for the day that South Carolina will be readmitted back in the ACC. I don't think it'll ever happen, but I really do believe it's a natural fit. It's a natural fit in terms of a rivalry.
I think it's a great rivalry. We should bring it back. I think the rivalry needs a name, a catchy name. That's
Battle of the Carolinas? I don't
something,
know.
Something like that. But the hype and the environment for Saturday was just, and the weather was great too to start with.
Absolutely.
We've got to just be thankful for all that. I think this
we had a great 3:30 start.
Exactly. We need to play in this game. I'd say every year would be nice. I don't think they're going to come back to the ACC because they like the SEC.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and in terms of the undergrad perceptions, were people pretty hyped up for this more so than the Miami rivalry? I mean, outside, a lot of the alums are more pumped up, it seems, for the Miami rivalry and the UVA rivalry in terms of football, which was good to see. From the undergrad point of view, a lot of people hyped up for this?
Definitely. Game. A lot of hype.
All right, well, caller, you're on the air, FM 89.3. Let's try again. How you doing?
All right, well, caller.
Yeah, he's got this, he's streaming. Caller, you're on the air. Man, all right. Well, that's all right. Yeah. Yeah, callers, listeners, we'll bear with you. 919-962-8989. Love to hear from you tonight. Call in at WXYC Sports Wrap. Yes, FM 89.3. You can also IM us at WXYC Request. That's one word. Be great to hear from you. All right. Caller, you're on the air. FM 89.3, Chapel Hill. How you doing tonight?
Hello.
Hey, how you doing? Who's going down? Come on now. Come on. School's out. Now, hey, if you're going to play around, hey, you don't know what you're doing. Maybe you had a few beers or a little bit, maybe a little touchy on the buttons. Bear with us a little bit, but you know what? Let it ease. Don't know who's listening out there, but 919-962-8989, all right? Okay. Let's move into the next end. We just said tough call for Joe Daly. Where do we see the Tar Heels in the future? Where do we see them going? We're going into a bye week. You know, we got a tough games with Maryland, Wake, State coming up. Mm-hmm. Can we win 4 out of the next 5? I mean, 4 out of 6 still would have put us in there. JB, you're kind of smirking and rubbing your eyebrows there. I'm telling you, this is a tough team. It's young but tough. I called 7 wins.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a 2-5 team.
They'd have to run the table.
This is not a 2-5 team, though. And, you know, we're going up against, I wouldn't say a formidable, but I think some games that we can have some good, fair, strong shots at and win in 4 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, what are your opinions?
I think 4 out of 5 is a little too optimistic. I just think Wake's better than a lot of teams give them credit for. Georgia Tech will always be a toss-up. That Maryland game is going to be the crucial one because it's a home game. But to go at Wake and to go at Georgia Tech, those are going to be tough road wins right there to try to pick up.
All right. Well, caller, we got a caller on the air. Caller, you're on the air on FM 89.3. Hey, how you doing tonight? All right. You're just not
Hello?
Working out.
Hello?
Yeah, you're there. Yeah.
Hello?
Caller, you on the air tonight, FM 89.3, Chapel Hill.
Hello.
Hey,
you there?
Yes, how's it going?
Not bad, how are you doing?
Good to get through to you. Were you trying to get through earlier?
No, I'm a new caller.
Okay, super, all right. Okay, my friend, where are you calling in from?
Well, you're talking about the USC-UNC rivalry.
Yes.
I got an idea.
Okay.
You all remember that bad idea that happened several years ago. We went and played NC State in Charlotte every
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
Now, that was a dumb idea.
Why was it a dumb idea?
25 miles apart.
Okay.
What if we took on USC in Charlotte every year? I mean, it's halfway in between the schools, a little bit closer to Columbia, but not much.
So you're envisioning a Florida-Georgia type style game like they do in Jacksonville,
or
every
a Red
year.
River Shootout kind of thing.
A Red River Shootout. I like the way you're calling that, and I've been a proponent of that. And hey, I've been a proponent of the ACC championship not being covered down in the Georgia Dome or anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yes, getting out of Jacksonville, really, and moving it to the heart of the ACC country in football-type weather, regardless if you're getting a lot of moisture or not, but really getting in the heart of ACC country, I'd love to see that. I think you're right on. Now, tell me why you think the NC State, though, rivalry, should not, why that can't be played in Charlotte.
Well, nothing wrong with it being in Charlotte. I think they had some great games down there. But, I mean, you're talking about, this is, if it's in Raleigh or in Chapel Hill, you've got a place that the undergrads of each place can go to the other game. And it makes them much
understand
more,
your points.
You know, that this is not, you look at Dallas, it's halfway between Austin and Norman. You look at Jacksonville, and it's not exactly, but it's roughly between Athens and Gainesville. The thing about you're taking two schools that are basically less than an hour apart and moving the game 2.5 hours down the road. That doesn't make any sense to me. But for the fans that drove up from Columbia, probably drove by Erickson Stadium on the way. If
you're
look
correct.
At the MapQuest map, it puts you right past Erickson going through Charlotte.
You are correct.
That's a much more natural thing. It's like instead of having the undergrads have to go all the way to one or the other, or you know, alumni or wherever, let's put it in Charlotte, which is also symbolically on the border between North Carolina and South Carolina.
Okay, now I'm a proponent of this rivalry, but my first knee-jerk reaction is, would people travel, would undergrads and would people travel, I guess you could say, to Charlotte, and would it be a big of a draw in Charlotte with Panthers games? Obviously, they can't do it. They're not doing a great job with the Bobcat tickets.
I don't know about
but you think that. But do you think that game would be a good, solid sell? In the city of Charlotte?
I think in the city of Charlotte it would be a good sell. I think Charlotte has been long known as a Tar Heel town. There's a lot of alums from UNC down there. And I think there's also plenty of people coming up from Columbia. So I think it's actually sort of an already divided city. So I think it would be a couple of years in there, it would create a really good buzz.
Okay. Well, guys, it looks like you're itching at the microphone. What are your thoughts here?
I do like the idea in theory. I think you run into a lot of practicality issues, especially money. I mean, who gets the money from that game, I guess? You know, UNC loved this weekend because they raked in so much money for Chapel Hill, for the university, for concessions. And then other, just kind of logistically, you know, who's selling the tickets, which athletic department's going the tickets, and you really are going to kind of screw undergrads out of the game by moving it to Charlotte. I mean, you have to do a whole new ticket distribution for them and everything. And I don't, you know, I think it'd be really nice to do it there, but I think the more optimal one is to do it every year. The UNC plays South Carolina every year. You rotate who has the home game every year, just like every other big rivalry, and you see huge economic boosts every other year in each one of that city. It's worked pretty well for Ohio State and Michigan. I mean, talk about a huge weekend for them. You know, I like the idea of rotating it home and home.
Now, another devil's advocate in terms of that.
Mm-hmm.
We have, and I'm going to probably take this opinion a little bit further than most. But you know, hey, how many seats do we have in Erickson Stadium? I think 85.
It's a little less than 80,000.
That's a nice chunk of change to be splitting in terms of
for a Super Bowl, so they
right.
built it that size.
And in terms of splitting 55,000, where it goes to one school, and then how many is it Williams-Brice? I would think they have 70. They got to be right at 70. I'm guessing on
right.
that one. There's a lot more receipts there. There's a lot more parking to do.
Boxes in there,
yes, and luxury boxes. So he makes a good point.
But you know, the town of Charlotte and the stadium itself gets a lot of that money.
In terms of that, in terms of renting that and renting the stadium and what have you. However, the student-wise, I think this is a good trip. And keep in mind, there was only 12,000 student tickets available for this game, and all of them were used. I think this is a good. I think the caller's onto something. I'm always for a big game in Charlotte. I'd love to see it. I am a little bit concerned about having it every year. I'd like to have it maybe every 2 years because I do think we're going to have room enough on our schedule to play a big boy school like Texas. Now, you know, South Carolina is going to be obviously right up there, but, you know, we've got Tennessee coming up. You know, those are, you know, I can understand the spacing of the games. Personally, I'm with you. I like to see it every year. And I'm up for the possibility of having that in Charlotte. I like this call.
Yeah.
I like this call, and believe me. I think we could throw down pretty good in the city of Charlotte. We got some serious UNC alums.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, caller, please call in again.
Now.
Yeah, great call. Great discussion. All right, we got another call. Caller, you're on the air, FM 89.3, Chapel Thrill. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Caller, you're on the air tonight. I think this guy's had a few beers. I really do. I think he's had a few pops in him. So I think that's a... Anyway, caller, you can call back, but come on. We got to step it up. I've shouted out the instructions. Turn down the radio. Turn down the computer. That's the fourth time. So we can work it from there. All right, 919-962-8989. Great call from that new caller. Mm-hmm. I love that one. All right, well, guys, let's talk about a big occurrence here, too. Midnight Madness started off Friday night. We had a lot of skits. We had the SNL-style skits from our fabulous, I guess you could say, newly found actors from the Tar Heel basketball team. And then we had a nice little scrimmage. What, you got a text message? What do you got?
Oh,
you
no.
Blowing up here? What are you, LeBron James?
No.
I'm going to make you sing probably the school fight song for that. JB, you blowing up? What's up?
I was just checking my phone.
You're checking your phone? All right, you got your people working for you? All right, okay. All right, well, guys, you were both at Midnight Madness. What did you guys think?
I thought, the skits are what they are. You kind of got to take away what you can from the scrimmage. Number one and two things I was impressed with at the scrimmage, William Graves, number one, hadn't seen much of him. And Danny Green looked good, hit some threes, got some offensive boards. Those are my two takeaways from late night with Roy scrimmage.
Danny Green. Now, before I get yours, JB, we got a caller in the air. Caller, you're on the air, FM 89.3, Chapel Hill.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely. I got you, man.
Bro, I tried this fucking eight times.
Hey! Hey!
Hey! Sorry.
Yeah, did you mind? Hey! Did your mom raise you in a barn?
Hey, can you hear me?
I don't care. You don't drop that F-bomb
here.
Why
can you hear me and I can't hear you?
Good. I got to knock you off for that F-bomb. All right. That's it. School's out. Can't do that. You can't have the F-bomb, huh? Jeez. You know better than that. All right. FM 89.3, Chapel Hill, WXYC. We got a little bit of a ban here on the calls for about. We have to hold off. We have to let you guys kind of sit down there, play with your rattles a little bit. Play there for about 3 minutes there. It's time out for 3 minutes. All right, guys, Midnight Madness. What do you think there, JB?
Willie Graves was a good surprise that no one really knew about him because of the red shirt. But I wish we could have seen Quentin Thomas play. I've heard a lot of articles. He's been doing a lot better. He's now almost a
big
teenager.
Q. Yeah, Q has improved his game.
Yeah.
And, okay, a little bit more?
Danny Green was lights out on fire.
I'd
like to see a little more from Wayne Ellington, but I was impressed with what I saw.
We've talked about Wayne Ellington earlier, and at the end of August, we were really on Wayne Ellington. You know, one of our co-hosts really banged on his jump shot, said he's floating, and he's missed a lot of big-time shots. There's a lot of pressure on him. He had a very tough Pan Am games.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really looking for Wayne to really kind of step up, and you're right. There is a little bit of pressure on them. But Danny Green,
mm-hmm.
guys, he could be a big sleeper here for the Tar Heels this upcoming year.
He's the perfect sixth man, in my opinion. Perfect guy, brings offense off the bench, brings energy off the bench. He'll block a big shot and everything. I think he's the number one guy you want coming off. He's going to be a great sixth man for the Tar Heels this year.
You make a good point. He could be a lot of ways what Rayshon Terry was in his junior year when he was backing up David Noel.
Mm-hmm.
I think a guy who can really solidly play good D. He's gonna hit a jumper when he has it and consistently. And I think he's playing head smart. That's the only thing. Can we get his head smart? Can he play more heady on the court? They have a little bit stronger court awareness. That's something that's a question out there with Danny. I think he's going to step up. We're going into his junior year. You know, defensively, now here's the reaction. I always say he's one of the better shot-blocking small forwards that I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. That's because he lets everyone get by him
and
then blocks a shot.
Right, that's what everybody – now, that's the first thing. But in a lot of ways, people could say, hey, that's just solid defense, that he's just waiting for the guy to get by so he can get a better angle on blocking his shots. His timing is great. I still say that he'd probably be one of the better volleyball players of all time here at Carolina if he played. All right, JB, you're looking like you're itching in.
Another look, Deion Thompson looks like he's in a lot better shape this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's trimmed down, and he and Stevenson, I think, are just going to control the boards, I think.
Absolutely. Those 19 and under games, he's lost 30 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, looks like Jerry Wainwright, and maybe it was the Serbian cooking. But, hey, phenomenal footwork. And if he can expand his repertoire to more than just two moves, I tell you, I think this guy is really going to be a phenomenal, solid player at Carolina and potentially an all-ACC player by the end of his senior year.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility for Deion.
Okay, well, then here's another one. And we'll call this one. We still got another two-minute ban on you guys. I know I can't. I I had two light up, but after that F bomb, I'm really ashamed of it. I have to call a quarantine on calls for 2 minutes. So at 8:30, at 9:36, we'll be back on. Greg, mm-hmm. the one guy that seems like to be making a few shots, at least in the scrimmages, and I think a lot of people are going to be looking at him in terms of leading the Heels, is Marcus Guignard.
Mm-hmm.
What are some thoughts maybe around the locker room? You covered, obviously, the practice. You covered, you know, they covered the Midnight Madness and the skits.
Mm-hmm.
Who emerged as really the leader, seems to be leading that team? I know Tyler Hansbrough was quoted in the News and Observer saying that he feels like he's really stepping out of an uncomfortable role mm-hmm. and stepping in and leading the team. Who do you really see emerging as a leader?
I think it's Guignard. I think it was Guignard last year. I think it'll definitely be Guignard this year. I mean, this isn't something new for him. He's been a leader for a while. And Hansbrough is trying to kind of step out of his comfort zone and be more of a vocal leader. But this is going to be Guignard's team. He's the most vocal guy, the most well-spoken guy, the clearest with the reporters after the game. It is Guignard's team. He's going to be a starter because he's that defensive lockdown player. So I think it's Guignard all the way.
Okay. How about... No, the guys, the one thing. Now, JP, you're itching to say. You want to make some. What's
I
your
just
call?
Think he's a more polished Jackie Manuel defensively with the charisma and mm-hmm. the personality. I think he'd be a great leader for our team.
Okay, and you're saying more polished. He's definitely a guy with more stronger offensive repertoire.
In the offense, yes.
Yes, okay. And a little bit more vocal. And now, in terms of defensively, you know what? I think, other than the long arms, I think he's just as, if not just as good. As Manuel, I think he's right there.
Yeah, Jackie did have the advantage of the freakishly long arms, but Guignard has proven he moves his feet just about as well as anyone I've seen play defense. He's going to be the lockdown guy for every other opposing team's star shooter.
And he's got the heart, and also what I like about him more, he can handle the ball. When it really comes down to emergency time, I really do believe in the last 2 minutes of the game, I think the ball should be touching his hands often. I mean, the guy can really handle the ball, and he could be a triple threat guy.
Mm-hmm.
Good point. All right. The band's off. Let's see how these guys do. What do you think, Greg?
Give him a shot.
Good. Give him a shot. All right. FM 89.3, Chapel Hill. How's it going tonight?
Give him a shot.
Hello, caller.
No, what?
He faded.
Here we go.
Put him up on the line.
Yeah.
Put him up on the line. We put a double up on the line. We got a double brick. All right. Caller, FM 89.3, Chapel Hill. How you doing tonight?
Hi, I just tuned in.
Okay.
And I don't know if you guys talked about Willie Graves yet.
That's what we're...
Pretty much lit it up during the scrimmage.
Okay,
what are
guys.
Your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I think William Greg, Graves is very impressive. And the thing with him is he's going to have to play this year. I mean, he's going to have to get minutes as a big guy. He's going to have to be one of the backup big guys. He'll probably have to play a little oversized. He's going to have to play the four. He's probably not really a four, but he's going to play. And I liked what I saw from him. I think he actually led the team in scoring in the late night scrimmage. I mean, he was making threes. He was making layups. He was getting fouled. Very impressed with what I saw from William Graves.
And I think his conditioning, he looks about the same size as Stevenson, who's one of the most muscular people on the team. And I think he'll be a force in the paint.
I'll tell you, he's ripped up. And JB, his conditioning is unbelievable. He is definitely long past the doughboy look that he had at Greensboro Dudley.
Yeah, he's ready to play.
He's definitely dropped a lot of pounds. Now, for an update, he did sit out yesterday's practice. I believe that his groin acted up again. He was out on yesterday's practice. So it'll be interesting to see how his body handles up on this. But I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is just the line. I see him grabbing the minutes that Danny Green had last year, just falling right into the rotation. I think he could be very good for 5 to 10 minutes of game. And one thing with William, he's got probably the prettiest stroke that I've seen since Max Owens here. Really, unbelievable form. I think this guy can be really a strong shooter.
Mm-hmm, no doubt.
All right. Well, callers, call in at 919-962-8989. Now, a guy that I want to touch on in terms of hoops-wise. Well, we got another caller. Let's try. We're hot tonight. And if we could just get him flowing through. Caller, you on the air tonight, FM 89.3, Chapel Hill. Ah, school's out. You're just killing me. I mean, it's pretty easy. You got the show on. So what you do is you turn down the volume, okay, on your computer and on your radio, however you're doing it. Because what you're doing is you're jamming up all the lines. If you're going to talk, jump on, just follow in, put the beer down. All right. Guys, the guy that I'm really hyped up for, and now I know that he was guarded by Mr. Bobby Frazier, but Tywan Lawson.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, very interesting case here. Very solid play. Looks like he's really cut up. He's really changed his body. He's kind of beefed up in his chest a little bit more. He's gained some upper body strength. Looks like he's changed his shot. Those are the reports that I'm hearing from the pickup games, from the scoop that I've heard from a lot of pickup games. Is that he's winning 3-4 games? Are you blowing up again, man?
Yeah.
What are you? You become like Kobe Bryant in the locker room. I like it, JP. That's hot, man. All right, but anyway, I think that he's got a lot of speed. He's built up in the upper chest. He's developing a consistent jumper. Guys, what do you think of Tywan Lawson? Do you think we could probably see a guy here who could be, you know, an emerging, you know, point guard in terms of Raymond Felton in his junior year, or even a Phil Ford? You know, what are some missing aspects, I guess, at Tywan? And I have my opinions on missing aspects, but what do you guys think?
No, it was good to see, you know, while Lawson made a few slices and dices to the basket on the late night with Roy scrimmage, it was almost like, it's good to see Ty Lawson's back, the old Ty Lawson's back. You know, blew by Frazier a couple times for some nice layups, finished his shots, looked really good. What he's got to add, and suppose he's working on a shot, we'll find out, you know, first few games of the season, what kind of three-point shot, what kind of jump shot he has, if the offseason work has paid off on that. The one thing he's got to improve his free throw shooting. That was a big crutch of his last year. He's going to get fouled late in the games. He's got to be able to hit his free throws.
Okay, well, we got a caller. Let's shoot over to him. All right, caller, you're on the air. FM 89.3, Chapel
Hill. Yeah, hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey, how you doing now?
Pretty good. I know you told me you got to turn the radio down, but it appears that the audio from urine isn't coming through. So you can hear me, but I can't hear you, so I got the radio on.
Okay. So you can hear us now. You can hear us now?
I can't hear you on my phone. I can hear you on the radio.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, we got you.
A shot. I know I'm breaking the rules.
We're present. It's all right. You're doing good, man. You're doing good. Where are you calling from?
Where are you calling from first?
They're
heading to Raleigh.
You're on the road? All right, man. That's good. All right.
I'm not going to lose the signal, am I?
No, man. You're doing fine.
All right. Yeah, so I got a question. Actually, a couple points I was trying to get through earlier while you were still talking about football. So
okay. Hey, bring it back, man. We'll go rewind. Let's go.
You guys were talking about all these different rivalries and bringing up, you know, how other schools make it work, you know, Florida, Georgia, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, you know, but the issue there is all these games are conference games, right? I was trying to think of, is there really any non-conference big-time games that would be analogous to a North Carolina-South Carolina matchup? The only one I can come up with is Florida-Florida State, where they play every year. But, you know, and I guess you could say Notre Dame-Southern Cal, but Notre Dame's being independent doesn't have those conference restrictions.
So
we
can throw them out.
To have an annual, you know, non-conference matchup just because they're so few and far between to start with. You only get 3 a year. And, you know, you don't want to beat yourself up. I mean, you've seen, obviously, this year, man, with teams losing, the way college football is, you don't want to pack yourself in difficult non-conference games.
Yeah.
And then how are you going to win 8-9 games, go to the bowl games the Boosters want to go to?
Well, that's a good point. You know, I didn't think about it. You got to give yourself some flexibility in the non-conference games to go non-conference areas where you can recruit. If you're tying up one of your non-conference games every year with South Carolina, you're passing up a matchup in Florida, a matchup in Pennsylvania, maybe an area you can go for a away game
and
to
recruit.
And that's
what we were saying earlier.
So, I think caller makes a good point here. You got to free up some of those non-conference opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, all the great rivals you guys talk about, I completely agree that the neutral sites are phenomenal, but they have to play those games anyway.
Yeah.
You know, other than Florida State, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, I can't think of anything else that would compare in terms of two big-time non-conference schools.
Now, would you be up to seeing it every other year? And, Caller, you can jive in on that one, too. I mean, would you be up to seeing that in 2010, 2012, 2014?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a good rivalry. It's a natural rivalry. And, obviously, I mean, I remember back when South Carolina was in the ACC. So, I mean, there's definitely that history there. It's just a matter of coming up with something that's reasonable and, you know, I don't know, every other year, every third year, something like that.
Yeah, something like that sounds good.
It should be every 15 years, you know, like it's been since the last time we played them.
And you make a good point in terms of other rivalries outside of conferences. But don't forget, you know, before Virginia and Miami were joined into the ACC, you had Miami and Florida State playing often. You had Virginia and Virginia Tech playing often, which was a very natural rivalry. You know, you have West Virginia and Maryland playing very – no, I'm not going to judge that, but I really kind of think that maybe on the right level, the West Virginia and Maryland rivalry. I mean, that was something that went on for years. I think this is a good one.
I think they could hype up the coaches' rivalry because these are two big-name coaches.
Hey, JB, can you speak up a little bit? I can't hear you, man.
Yeah, jump in.
I think they should hype up the coaches' rivalry. These are two big coaches who have played against each other once or twice before, but they're two of the biggest names in college football.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, great NFL experience. You got guys that'll use the media, have no problem with it.
I don't know that I would call Spurrier and Bush Davis a tenure NFL a great experience.
Yeah, not great NFL experience.
I mean, in terms of
it's not great, and I agree.
That definition Boston was amazing.
But I'll tell you what, in terms of, I guess you could say, if coaches, I would say they're better than Al Groh. I would say they're better. Maybe we'll see. We'll find out with Bobby Petrino. But I do think that they are very, in terms of college coaching, I should say they are great.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I mean, really, they are probably, I would say we both of them have to be in the top 10, top 7 coaches in the NCAA right now. I really do believe that if you had to rank coaches, I do believe Spurrier and Butch Davis would be in the top 7.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, and in terms of the NFL-wise, you know, I think this will come back. I do believe Butch Davis will get a call one of these days and very soon. But Spurrier, I think he'll always be in college. But, you know, you could have said his Redskins experience. Yes, it was. It was pretty poor.
Yeah.
All right.
I had to take one other point.
Let's
that
do
you
it.
Made earlier.
Let's go.
And that was I took slight offense to when you said Greg Little's play was, I think the last play you said you saw do that was Corey Holiday.
Oh, I love Corey.
Now, I realize you're dating yourself a little bit. I remember Corey Holiday, too. I'm going to take issue with that for a couple reasons.
Why?
One, Corey Holiday was a possession receiver. I don't think Corey Holiday ever had that athleticism.
He was a possession receiver, but he had athletic talent. I probably should have probably said maybe Bucky Brooks. How about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you're saying most recent. Most recent, I'd say our Heisman candidate, Darius Bowman, made a play or two.
Well,
yeah.
Darius, Whoa. Darius Bowman was on another level that I don't think there will be a receiver probably as talented to walk through Carolina football until the next couple of years until Darius Bowman. Darius Bowman was an incredible talent. It's a shame that he had to leave. I'm telling you, I think that he will have a 10-year career in the NFL.
Oh, I think he's a beast. I would say Darius Bowman, and if you want to say, okay, exclude him because he only played, a year or two, I would make the argument Octavius Barnes actually made play more similar. More than Corey Holiday.
Good call. I like Octavius. I know Octavius. I like Octavius. I'll tell you what, I'll go with Corey. I'll go with Corey Holiday in terms of that. In terms of the feet, in terms of great hands, yeah, I like Brooks Foster, too. He had great hands as well. So I hear you. Maybe I should have used as a better example. I like the way you're calling me out, though. Way to stick in there.
I mean, yeah.
Throw that jab.
If you're going to go back to the early 90s.
Throw that jab out there. I like it. I like that, man. So, you just promise that you're going to keep on calling in.
As long as I get the show and as long as I can get to hear you guys, I can call in.
Keep calling, man. I like that.
Next time, tell JB to answer his phone, though.
Absolutely. I mean, he's the locker room. I don't know what it is. He's starting to become the locker room lawyer here. He's got the buzzer. He's got everything going, man. He's the Kobe Bryant in here, man.
Anyways, all right, I got to go chase
it's the
thing.
Smush I'll Parker.
Talk to you guys later, man. Have a good night.
Right,
yeah, good call. Good call. JB, you're the Smush Parker of the WXYC Sports Rap Show. All right, Sports Rap, FM 89.3, Chapel Hill. How you doing tonight? Yeah, this is there. I don't know what's going on there.
Hello?
I don't know what's going on. Ah. So anyway, he was trying. Looks like maybe on our end then. My apologies are due. It worked for one caller, and it's not worked for a couple others. So my apologies are due. Maybe switch over to WXYC.org. If you're listening on radio, maybe that could help. And you can stream us online. Caller, you're on the air, FM 89.3, Chapel Hill. Wow.
Hello, caller.
A lot of feedback, a lot of stuff there. Okay. We're talking about Tywan Lawson. He brought up a good point about William Graves. Mm-hmm. Got a little injured. We got to get him healthy. And get him on the court. Quentin Thomas is already out, so that would have been. You're right, JB. It would have been good to see him. I'm sorry, you got to bring up to that microphone. What's this deodorant like tonight? Good. All right, you guys are sharing the microphone. All right, I feel bad about that. All right, caller, you on the air? FM 89.3, Chapel Hill. Hello. All right.
But with the Tywan Lawson comment, I have to bring up something you said. I think by showing on Midnight Mass, he's by far better than Eric Maynard.
Whoa!
Yeah,
Just show me then. Show me that.
Smooth play and.
Okay, show me that. Show me that. He got beat.
I think he'll see it this season.
I'm all for it. I love Tywan.
And I think he'll be.
I love Tywan.
I think right
now,
he'll be a lottery pick.
Right now, I would take Eric Maynard. I would take Eric Maynard over Tywan Lawson right now.
You just remember one game Eric Maynard's played in.
He had a phenomenal NCAA play, and he did phenomenally well in the second half of last year all throughout the Colonial the CAA. He did great. He really is. He's a great player. Don't buy the bias of VCU.
He was playing the CAA. Tywan Lawson was playing the ACC.
I'm telling you, Eric Maynard is a player.
Oh, he
Eric
is a
Maynard's
player.
A player, and he proved it in the Pan Am games. All I'm saying, I didn't see Ty trying out for the Pan Am games. He steered way clear of that. Sharon Collins got beat out by Eric Maynard. I'll tell you one thing. Sharon Collins is a hell of a point guard at Kansas.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I'm just saying he's in that pocket
guards.
There. Mm-hmm. There's some good point guards out there. Right now, I got Tywan maybe about 3 or 4 That's just where I'm at right
that's
now.
Fair.
That.
That's fair.
I think Darren Collison's a hell of a point guard, even though he's got to prove a little bit more of a shot. But I think he's a really heady player. I think he's got great handles. It's just something I just want to see. I want to see a little bit more floor general-esque performances out of Taiwan. That's all I'm asking for. Now, I'm not saying he's Greg Paulus. I'm not saying that. Just show me a little bit. I give a lot of respect for Greg Maynard. Eric Maynard. I think he's a hell of a player.
Oh, he is.
Okay. All right, caller, you're on the air, FM 89.3, Chapel Hill.
Yeah, I got two questions about the basketball game for you
okay.
guys that I wasn't able to make.
Absolutely. Shoot it up.
One was Bobby. What's his foot look like?
Okay.
Bob. Did you get a feel of that at all?
No,
Bobby says in practice his foot is 100%. It's as good as it's ever been. He says his shot is back to where it was in high school. Bob, according to Bobby, he's as good to go as he ever has been.
Okay. Now, I talked to Bobby, and he did say hey, throughout the fall practices he did very well. I guess you could say the fall workouts.
Mm-hmm.
He won the foot. He won the mile run. So, I mean, his foot seems to be strong. And it's, you know, hey, he knocked down a couple jumpers in the game.
So my question then for you, if we do believe that Bobby's healthy and his foot's healthy,
mm-hmm.
then do you see going back to where you have two, 3-point guards on the floor like Kansas, or is it Taiwan's show to run? Because Roy used to run multiple guards without really one dominant point guard.
Greg, you want to tackle
I see Bobby's main role this year being the shooting guard who comes off the bench for Ellington. I don't, you know, there'll be times when Roy uses Lawson and Fraser on the court at the same time, even Fraser and Ellington on the court at the same time. But right now, his role is going to be, I think, coming off the bench, giving Wayne a blow, still being that shooting guard perspective.
Okay.
So you see him as an offensive threat, which he hasn't really been at UNC, but came with that reputation.
Right. Absolutely. If you remember, hey, in the Gibbons tournament in Houston, Texas, he really lit it up, and that's why Roy Williams really loved him, is because of his shooting. I mean, he was a dead-eye shooter. And really, it's kind of has not proven that, or I guess you could say that his shot has kind of fallen to the wayside in the last 2 years. But then again, that wasn't his role.
Well, yeah. And Collar's right. He's a better defender than Lawson, far better defender than Lawson. And, you know, defense has kind of been why he's gotten his playing time. But from what he said, he's been shooting in the gun in practice. His shot is back to where it was in high school. He thinks he can be somewhat of a scorer this year.
I'll tell you one thing with Bobby Fraser, and I will say this. He's probably the most heady, court-savvy player I've seen in the past 5-6 years. Really, he doesn't turn over the ball. He moves the ball. He moves the ball within that offense on the secondary breaks. He doesn't turn over the ball, which is huge. I love Frazier's court presence.
Oh, yeah.
And he has great court vision. I'd love to see him a lot more. And you know what the thing is? Sometimes I've wondered he's been out of position. He's been forced to play a point when he's really a natural two guard. All right, JB.
I got one more question for the host that was reminiscing about Bucky Brooks in courthouse.
No, you're killing me on this. Come on.
Going into the Will Gray situation, talking about how he was blowing up. I don't know if you recall, but I believe it was the blue-white game probably, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years ago when Terrence Newby dropped about 40 in the blue-white game.
No, you're comparing. Well, all right, so what's the comparison? You're going to compare Terrence Newby to my comparison of who? Greg Little?
Well, it's Will Graves. Word of caution, would you not agree?
I would say with Will Graves, I think this is with Will Graves. This is and to say that he's Terrence Newby, I would say that's a far stretch. I think he's far more talented. Hey, no. Oh, he left. Yeah, that was a good point. But I'm going to let me defend that. To say that he's Terrence Newby, the all-woolen guy from Siler City, I mean, I love Terrence. He was Ed Cota's, you know, run he made up at players. But you know what? I always thought that I think that Will Graves will be a better player when he's a junior, when he gets some court presence and he understands, hey, here's the system, and this is he gets understands spacing, and he's able to have a little bit of confidence in shot. I think he's far better than Terrence Newby. Now, I'm not anointing him in the top 8 or 9 guys on the squad, but as a 10th man coming off that bench, you can be able to, you know, probably provide a spark and, you know, provide some defensive help. I mean, it's going to be tough getting around him, certain guys, because he's so wide. He's really strong. I mean, if he checks up on somebody, it's going to be tough getting around him. So, you know, Will Graves, I'm expecting good things from him. But as a freshman, no, he's a 10th man. Greg, support me. Somebody help me out.
You say as a freshman, he's a redshirt freshman.
He's a freshman. He's a freshman coming in. He's young for his age. JP, so you're expecting to see him really rip it up?
No, he's not going to rip it up. I'm saying he's going to get a little more playing time than I think you're saying. He's been in Roy's system for this is his second
5 to 10 minutes. So that's what I called.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, and is that fair?
That's fair.
Okay. Now you want more time, you think, for him?
No, I think this year that's fair.
All right, but you know what? He's going to have to protect the ball. He's going to have to make heady decisions, or Coach Williams is going to sit him down very quickly. He's got Danny Green and Marcus Ginyard to play those positions.
Hello.
All right. Caller, you're on the air, FM 89.3, Chapel Hill.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing? Ah, looks like he's having a tough time.
Yeah.
Tough time.
Cannot hear you guys on your audio.
Ah, what a shame. Well, anyway, talk in. Ah, tough line. He may be listening on the radio.
Sound like the boss man.
Hey, the boss man's got always got valid points, and I like the boss man. He always gives up good points. I'm missing him this week. The guy did gives up
very
good stuff.
We apologize for these phone problems.
Yeah, that's on our end. So we'll fix that up for you next week. All right, 919-962-8989. Got about 5-6 minutes left here. Should we go over to a little baseball? Okay, go a little baseball. Greg, Mr. Found, I like the Colorado Rockies thing, but I didn't know you were such a Rockies a fan here. What's going on? You're on the wagon. What do you think?
No, I'm not on the wagon. I just think they're a fun team to watch. They're hot right now. They got a lot of young guys. I love watching them because the sky's the limit for that team.
Okay. All right. Now, so Clint Hurdle, what do you think? Do you think sky's the limit? Can they take on the American League? Can they do pretty well? I mean, this is something they're up 2-0 now.
Yeah, no doubt about it. They can take on any team the way they're playing. I mean, how can you say any team that's won 19-20? They could play anyone right now. You know, they're hot. That's why they're fun to watch, you know.
All right.
So, you got to like watching the Rockies, especially all their young guys. And they got Ubaldo Jimenez, who throws some heat. He throws some gas. Another fun guy to watch.
Absolutely. Manny Corpus. Great stuff out of the Rockies. Now, you brought a good question up in the green rooms. I'll smush. If you want to jump in, you can. Basically, you were saying, hey, who's the better team? Is it a crapshoot in the playoffs for baseball?
Yeah, my take. I wrote a column about this about a year and a half ago that basically said that the baseball playoffs are more about luck than being good. Once you get to the playoffs, it takes a darn good team to get to the playoffs. That's the whole battle in baseball, is you got to win, you know, you got to perform over that 162-game season. Once you're there, it's all lucky bounce here, you know, home run there. It's more about luck than this necessarily the best team. I think if you look back at the past World Series winners, it's not always been the best lineup, the best pitchers that have gotten it done. Sometimes it's been a team that's really hot, like we're seeing the Rockies this year. Last year was the Cardinals. They were not hot at all going into the playoffs. They were the winners. The year before, it's been a hot wild card team. The Astros made it to the World Series. They were hot. You know, so it's not always about who's hot, who's not. It's always not always about who has the best lineup. A lot of times it just comes down to luck. It really is a crapshoot in the MLB baseball playoffs.
Okay, now, hey, now to play to take a different side of that in terms of crapshoot, I'm not denying it takes a little luck. But, geez, you look at some of the past winners. Their pitching staffs have been unbelievable. I mean, you could look at Arizona, the Diamondbacks in 2001. Mm-hmm. I mean, with Schilling and Johnson just going back-to-back, and it just fit perfectly for series play. You know, Josh Beckett and the Marlins in 2003, phenomenal, just mowing people down.
Mm-hmm.
The Angels in 2002 with their staff. I mean, Mike Scioscia with a great managed staff. Is it more than just the crapshoot or really just the hottest team at the time? Maybe we could look at the Yankees this year. You could say that could be a crapshoot, but you know what? Their pitching was really kind of on wobbles the whole year long.
Well, the pitching is what gets you to the playoffs. But, I mean, last year the Tigers clearly had better starting pitchers, far better than the Cardinals, and didn't help them very much. I mean, they lost 4-1 in the series. So pitching is what gets you there, but I think it's a lot of luck in the playoffs.
Okay. Well, the boss man's trying to get through. It looks like we got some audio problems. So I know that you're pretty close with him, Smush. If you want to email him, that would be a big help. All right. Okay, so I'm sorry because I took that last call, but yeah, the Yankees were a little bit wobbly. And in terms of the Red Sox, great pitching, but if we look at last night, you know, is it a crapshoot? Their bullpen really kind of fell apart at the end there. Other than Papelbon, who really went on his longest outing of the year, I mean, they kind of are wobbly in that bullpen. It's really, to me, it's more than just it's more about the pitching in the playoffs. In those 4-3-4 game series, or I should say, in the 5-7 game series, it's really about who's got the strongest pitching. And I think that's what really kind of wins it down. That's why the Oakland A's have been there for so long. You know, that Hudson, Mulder, Zito, you know, those three starters right there, you can't deny that.
Yeah, the Oakland A's really haven't been there, though. I mean, they haven't made a World Series in the last 10 years, though. And the other thing is,
pretty
you know,
damn good performances, though, for the stuff that they've had in terms of their lineup. You can't deny, I mean, what their record was throughout the late 90s and the early part of this decade.
Right, the record in the regular season. The pitching's great in the regular season, and that's what gets you to the playoffs. But everyone thought the Fausto-Carmona-Curt Schilling matchup last night was going to be a great matchup. That was not a pitcher's duel. Everyone thought CC Sabathia, you know, the strong pitcher, the Cy Young probable winner in the AL. It's not all about starting pitching. Starting pitching has a tendency to kind of come and go in a lot of these playoff games.
What about the middle relief pitching? We've got Rafael Betancourt. We've got, and if you look at the Indians, you want to take them as an example? Yeah, okay, Carmona got knocked out, Sabathia, but Jake Westbrook, Paul Byrd did very good against the Yankees. You got Betancourt. Right. And then you know what they have? More so than any other team, which I've been saying about the Cubs, that have really held them back in terms of their playoff performances, got a great closer. I mean, Joe Borowski is a hell of a closer. Yeah, he got bombed a couple times in the early part of the season, but really a phenomenal closer. And if you really look at these staffs, I really think that's what I think is the mainstay of playoff performance, is that if you have a really strong staff. Just my opinion. I agree with it. Luck takes a Lady Luck plays a big role in chance.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, look at the Marlins. I mean, obviously everybody can, you know, fault Bartman, which I don't think, but I think Alex Gonzalez drops a ball here. They're out of that inning. You know, I mean, there is chance, but that's the part of the game. But I really think pitching staffs, that really makes a big difference in playoff ball.
No, it certainly does, but you can't, you know, you either got to take starting pitchers or the bullpen. I think you kind of switch back and forth a little bit there. I mean, it's either starters or the bullpen. Pitching staffs are what win in baseball, like you say in any other sports. You know, football, you say defense wins championships. Baseball, the same mantra kind of applies. Pitching wins you games, gets you to the playoffs. But really, you know, you can count on your ace and you can get him set up for the perfect game and you can feel real confident about who you got going. But like we saw with Sabathia in game one, he's not always going to be the ace every game, you know? So a lot of times it really just comes down to which pitcher can get hot at the right time. Last year for the Cardinals, Anthony Reyes pitched great, had a great outing.
Shut down
the Tigers. Terrible year this year, you know? So that was an example of a starting pitcher who was really not that good, but, you know, just like it is a crapshoot, all of a sudden he rolled the right dice, and there he was in the World Series picking up a huge win.
Okay, so Anthony Reyes, a crapshoot, okay. But now I'm going to take the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Curt Schilling, a veteran pitcher, and look at his performance that he had with the Red Sox in 05. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, he was unbeatable. I mean, and it's obviously the bloody sock performance will go down of all time as one of the most chilling moments in baseball lore.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, or even a Mark Pryor, you could probably say that he was a crapshoot. But really, I mean, he was on the path of being a phenomenal pitcher, and he was lights out in the playoffs. I mean, now do we consider him as a crapshoot? I'm just saying, I understand that Lady Luck, and I understand that point. But I give the staffs credit, and these teams that are younger, that are emerging, and really making, you know, making some noise in the playoffs outside of the Yankees, you know, or the Yankees or the Red Sox, it's about strong pitching in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's shoot up here. What do we have here? A new science experience coming up. We got Lady Luck. We're talking about Lady Luck. We got a new lady here. Very, very elegant lady. She's going to bring some nice tunes for you, some nice beats. I can feel it. They're coming. So basically what you need to do is dim those lights because, man, she's going to really be dropping some beats on your head. You won't even know what hit you. Here on the New Science Experience, coming up at 10 o'clock, WXYC, we perform so greatly for you. We bring it every night. All right, well, till next week, Mr. Found and Smush. That's my new nickname for you, man.
It's JB.
It's JB, man. You got the pager blowing up. I love it, though. I love it. You're my main man. Boss man, we tried to get that thing for you. The audio wasn't working so well, but we'll work on that. And our apologies to you. Great call. And I figure that those are some of the people that you may know.
Oh, we got the boss man. Jazz JB.
You
got
the whole
boss
going. So you had the Lodge Boys calling in. The F-bomb was a hurt, but you know what? Very, very good calls. And you know what? I took some heat on that for the Holiday and Bucky Brooks call. I'll tell you what. I liked Holiday. Still check the stats. Come on. He's one of the top three receivers of all time. I'm telling you, UNC, check the stats. All right. Next week, we got a bye week. But I'm not going to be here next week. But the trio, Kurt Spurlock, will be here with Mr. Found and Mr. JB. And then the next week after, we're going to have a college basketball preview. All right? My top five. You know what? I'm really with Jay Billis right on those things. I don't think it's going to be changing, but you're going to have UNC, Memphis, and KU, UCLA, Michigan State. You really can't beat them. So anyway, we're going to be having a good college basketball preview coming up in 2 weeks. So, all right, for Greg Found, Mr. JB Bradley, Smush with the T-Mobile. What do you got there? What is that?
I got Verizon.
What is it?
It's just Samsung.
All right. Well, anyway, we got the New Science Experience coming up. I'm Brett Doherty. Thanks for joining us here on Sunday night on Chapel Hill.